Wild Card. Hey everyone, David Ruiz, writing David back here with a new episode of the 2020 playoffs. Wild Card Weekend came and went. We are just a few days behind schedule, looking for a divisional round coming up. But I wanted to briefly go over Wild Card Weekend. I think it lived up to the hype. I believe it was truly wild card. Ha ha ha. But no, I mean, there were a lot of crazy storylines that came out of this weekend. And we'll start by saying that three of the four road teams won during wild card weekend. I mean, you know, sometimes having a home playoff game matters. And sometimes, I don't want to say it doesn't, but, you know, it's not maybe truly the home field advantage some teams were looking for. And that's the beauty of the beast, right? I mean, you don't want playoff games to kind of go down their predicted route. That becomes a little boring, I think. It could be a good game. But I think once you get into the playoff and you get into playoff mode, that you kind of want to see the unexpected. And I believe we got that tenfold this past weekend. Wild Card Weekend was great. I was on the edge of my seat for almost every game. I was glued. You know, I couldn't not stop watching. It was great. It was great football. So let's dive in. I want to just briefly kind of give you my reaction to each game. Give my two cents, and then we'll briefly look ahead to the divisional round, which also has some pretty good games going. But let's start off with what kicked off Wild Card Weekend, and that was the Buffalo Bills at the Houston Texans. And if you've listened to me talk or write about the Buffalo Bills for Last Word on Pro Football, I couldn't help but criticize that I was still waiting for that signature win. They had a 10-6 season. Josh Allen looked great. That defense is great. Sean McDermott should get some candidate or some votes for head coach of the year candidacy. Obviously not going to get it, but I think he's taking that football in the next step, and that's what you want in a young, inexperienced team. And, man, they came out firing. That was a great, beautiful play from John Brown to Josh Allen for the first score of the game. Their run game got them going. Texans hadn't woken up, never showed up. I mean, it was 16-0 at the game, and I tweeted this out, and I'm sure everyone else did and remembered. They got blanked in last year's wild card game to the Colts. So they had gone six quarters without scoring any points. Like, that's not going to win you any playoff games. I'm sorry. And we all know how great Deshaun Watson and company can be. And you had an emotional return of J.J. Watt, who was coming from that torn pec. It's incredible that he played on that game. I believe Bill O'Brien said he was on some kind of snap count. But if I remember right, I mean, he may have – I don't think he started the game. But other than that, like, I don't remember seeing J.J. coming out of the game, which was incredible because that guy is just – superhuman. I mean, and for someone, I don't want to get too off topic, but for someone who has suffered major injuries throughout his illustrious career, for him to play in that game, I think that was pretty cool. But like I said, it was 16-0 at halftime, and going into about 11 minutes of the third quarter, finally Houston started to put drives together. And as cliche as it may be, but, you know, it started and ended with Deshaun Watson's arms and legs. He got them into the red zone. He got them into the end zone. You know, you could sense that Buffalo, at one point to me, looked like they were playing the clock instead of the Texans. Because, yeah, it was a one-score game. Buffalo nursing. I mean, maybe a little cocky. I wrote that, too. That knowing that if the Texans were going to tie this game, then it would have to be we'll start from the beginning, had to be 2 touchdowns and 2 2-point conversions. They got 1. Buffalo, I don't know. I get it. I do. But once you get to the playoffs, I feel you do have to be a little more aggressive because you run with Singletary and Gore. You know, clock ticks. Houston starts to have to using their timeouts. But you don't put up any points. I mean, 3 points when it's 16-8 when it made a 2-score game. No matter what. But I don't know if Buffalo took their foot off the gas pedal or combined the fact that Houston kind of had momentum getting defensive stops. I don't know. It looked a little wonky to me. And lo and behold, late in the fourth quarter, Deshaun Watson magic again. We're tied at 16. Now, yeah, Houston would go on to take the lead briefly with 3 points there. But we saw Josh Allen kind of create a masterful drive to get Hauschka in the field goal range, tie that game. And it goes to overtime. And if you're watching this game, you're like, well, I don't know who's going to win this game because Buffalo had momentum, Houston had momentum. Now we're deadlocked again in 19-19 going into overtime. And, you know, Buffalo had a chance. They got the ball first. Josh Allen made a couple nice plays here and there, but nowhere real in any kind of threat for scoring drives. And they punt. And we'll fast forward, you know, the Texans are driving. And I've watched this play at least a dozen times. I believe it was both the corner and the safety just come off the edge. Free shot at Watson. Should have been sandwiched. I don't remember field positioning, but I believe that may have either taken him out or it would have been a 50-plus yarder to win the game. Instead of a sandwich sack, Watson somehow magically stays up on his feet, hits his tight end, who gets him down to the 10. Here comes Fairbear. They win the game. Incredible series of plays. The end overtime. And you can't help but feel for Buffalo. Because Buffalo had this game. I'm convinced a few plays that could have went their way would have sealed this game. We would never have gotten to overtime. But that's just how playoffs go. When you give someone opportunities that are hanging around that you cannot put away, more often than not, that team comes back and burns you. And Texans, I'm sorry, Houston fans, but like they had no business winning this game. They really didn't. They were playing real, real ugly football, just putting nothing together, nothing going their way. They're down double scores. And the fact that they win this game is just, that's just sheer willpower. They should have been knocked out of this game. Instead, heartbreak defeats goes to Buffalo this year. And the Texans are moving on. And, you know, you tip your cap. You played a good game, great game, but that's just how it goes sometimes. Moving on to Tennessee and New England. I think it was no secret that we all knew Derrick Henry was going to be the workload in this game. The man had 200-plus all-purpose yards. I mean, New England, as great as their defense, and that was going to be their greatest strength in this game, was getting stops. And they had no answer for Derrick Henry. Ran up and down, left and right, end zone. I mean, there's only so much you can ask of your defense. And the bigger story is that Tom Brady, you know, not really having any kind of offense materialize. You got, you know, your playoff heroes and Julian Edelman and James White. But if they're your only two people, and Tennessee knows this, I mean, they're pretty much daring you to have someone else beat you. And it never happened. And, yeah, I mean, shock the world, go into Gillette Stadium into New England and beat Tom Brady, which has only happened 3 times prior. in his, you know, 50-year career. But Tennessee's game plan was sound. You know, let's give it to Derrick Henry. If Ryan Tannehill is going to throw the ball, then he's going to make short throws, short gains, whatever. That's not going to turn the ball over. And yeah, he did have a pick. But even when he threw that pick, like, New England just, like, it never materialized in anything. And so Henry gets the ball 25 times, whatever it was. Run, run, run. Tick, tick, tick. You got nothing you can do about it. And you know there's nothing you can do about it because Tennessee's offensive line was just moving people out the way. And, you know, final play, pick six by Logan Ryan, former Patriot, to the house. And you leave your stamp. Now, we didn't know at the time, but we know now that Tom Brady is coming back. But, you know, to throw pick six, to possibly end your career, and it's just like a bunch of lows, really, in that game for New England. It's something we really hadn't seen coming out of them. But I think a lot of people had concern knowing that this game wasn't a great matchup for them, knowing that the, you know, the 2019 rushing leader was coming into town, and Ryan Tannehill had been playing sound football. It just, you know, they get New England scores that nice touchdown with the end around to Edelman, but that's it. I mean, field goals from there, and you can't settle for field goals in the postseason. It's going to get you killed. And unfortunately, they got New England killed. So those were Saturday's games. Both games were really good. Sunday's games, well, at least one of them, I thought, was really good. And that was the first one, the Minnesota Vikings at the New Orleans Saints. And I can't fathom what it's like to be a Saints fan these days. Three heartbreaking, gut-wrenching playoff exits, twice to Minnesota in that three-year span. We obviously remember the Rams loss in overtime. That kind of created the whole pass interference review rule. But, you know, I think the Saints do have a lot of blame to place on themselves. This had been a team that was scoring or averaging 40 points per game. I mean, they're lining up. They got possibly the best receiver in the game, one of the more athletic, versatile backs in Kamara. You know, Drew Brees is lighting it up with Michael Thomas. I mean, there's just a lot right going for that team. And Minnesota knew this. It's no secret. They knew that if they could, you know, kind of hold New Orleans to limited chunk plays that wasn't going to break the game open. And that's what they did. New Orleans never really looked to hit their stride. Minnesota was constantly pressuring Drew Brees. I mean, they had that fumble force on him and the interception that later led, I believe, to the Dalvin Cook touchdown. And for as, you know, all the storylines that New Orleans faced going in and out of this game, I mean, there was no bigger one than Kirk Cousins. This is the man Minnesota brought in to compete in the NFC North, to compete in the playoffs. I'm going to pay you $84 million. We need you to produce. If he had lost this game, everyone with a voice or a pen would have heavily criticized Kirk Cousins for not winning the big game, can't beat a 500 team, can't win on the road, you name it. Instead, he played pretty great football. I mean, you know, they were on the move to start the game, if not for that Adam Thielen fumble. But I mean, their offense was pretty good. Dalvin Cook, you know, kind of like Derrick Henry the day before, just really finding those gaps, hitting that hole. Saints really powerless to stop them. And, yeah, I mean, Minnesota maybe could have won a little bigger that didn't need overtime as well. But, you know, I never felt watching that game that Minnesota was going to choke this game away. And yeah, they did, you know, New Orleans did get that kind of chunk play from Taysom Hill, who caught, I believe it was the game-tying field goal, or touchdown. And, you know, you kind of wonder why Taysom Hill wasn't more heavily involved. Drew Brees really not airing it out like we're used to seeing, but Taysom Hill did. He had that beautiful bomb in the first half. He's blocking for Kamara. He catches a touchdown. Like, he was doing it all. And maybe if they use him a little more, maybe they win that game. Who knows? But we get to overtime. Vikings get the ball first. Cousins hits a beautiful bomb to Thielen. Two plays later, hits Kyle Rudolph in the back of the end zone for the walk-off winner. Now, let's just talk about it for a minute. You know, if yes, if no, Kyle Rudolph pushed off for offensive pass interference. To me, it's a little tricky, and I don't have a horse in this race, and I don't, you know, neither of these teams are my team. But, you know, like, yeah, you can kind of see the arm extend a little bit. But if you look at the defender, like, it never really hindered him from playing Rudolph. And I know that's kind of a weak argument. But, like, it wasn't super blatant, I guess, is what I'm saying. Yeah, because, I mean, receivers, you know, they arm and hand check 24-7. But the fact that we do see his arm kind of out there, you could argue that it was. And now Al Riveron, the head of officiating for the NFL, says he took a look at it. It was really quick on the Fox broadcast. He later tweeted that they looked at numerous Fox angles that they were given, didn't determine that anything was from it, and the play stood as called. And, I mean, I don't know how either hilariously cruel it is that this happened in New Orleans at the very same building which the rule was created to review pass interference. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to tell people what to think there. All I know is that Minnesota won that game, and it's another disappointing Saints playoff exit. And again, I'm sorry, Saints fans, but it's hard. It's a tough pill to swallow for the third straight year. I mean, that's pretty bad. Lastly, we had the Seattle Seahawks and the Philadelphia Eagles. And I know we were all kind of criticizing the NFC East for its poor play between Philly and Dallas. But Philly, you know, won that division. They beat Dallas, which was a good team this year. They weren't terrible, but they were just kind of faltering down the stretch there. You know, to win the division and host a playoff game and host a Seattle team that was coming, you know, off a pretty bad loss themselves when they couldn't beat the Niners for the NFC West crown the week prior. So, you know, this is Carson Wentz's first playoff start game. You know, he finally plays a full season. Mostly injury free. And you welcome a Seahawks team that, just like Philly, was really, really beat up. I mean, Seahawks have no running backs. Philly has no receivers. And so, you know, the game was in the balance. It was 3-0 Seattle for a while there. And Carson Wentz is finding his groove. And then the unfortunate happens. To me, it looked like Jadeveon Clowney did target the back of his head. It's easy to see it in slow-mo. I thought it kind of looked easy to see in real time. And Carson Wentz is out for the game with a concussion. I mean, just how poopy does that make you feel for an Eagles fan, especially, or a Carson Wentz fan in general, where here's someone that finally got you, you know, gave you a full season and making his first playoff start and only for it to last, what, a quarter? And here came Josh McCown, the 40-year-old, and he played his heart out. You know, it's insanely tough to be a third stringer who doesn't get a lot of reps with the first offense team or playbook, and you're asking the world of a quarterback who has been around. It's not like he doesn't know, you know, play calling and whatnot, to kind of go out here and win us this playoff game that we were trailing in. And it's an impossible task, but he played his heart out. You know, he gave them chance. Seattle gave up some big plays, but when it mattered most, they were, you know, a brick wall in the red zone. This Philly never could never punch it in, had to settle for field goals, fourth down attempts, you name it. And so you give credit to Seattle for winning that game. Another thing I liked from Seattle, and it's something that's not really new, but you know, Russell Wilson knew that if they're going to win this game, it's got to be by him, right? It's not going to be because of the defenses. And yeah, they did do their part, but not because of the defense. It's going to be a brick wall or special teams, or, you know, field goals, whatever. He knew that he was going to have to take his shots and cash in touchdowns. And he did that to DK Metcalf on a beautiful play that both kind of put the game away at that point. And then the third down bomb with under 2 minutes to seal the game. I mean, those are incredible plays from Wilson and Metcalf. Now, Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer didn't really get their run game. I don't think they had 20 yards of rushing between those two combined, which is not great. We know Wilson can escape the pocket and pick up monster third downs and just do a lot of stuff that drives you crazy. And he did it all game to Philadelphia. Philadelphia couldn't get off the field when they needed to. Couldn't not let them score when they needed to. And Seattle, who is now 8-1 on the road, in which their playoff road is going to, if they're going to get to the Super Bowl, it'll most likely be all road games. And that's, you know, they're a team that they're a hard team to put away. And they showed it. They showed their mettle. They showed their mental fortitude. And they're moving on. And so, you know, they were the last game on Wild Card Weekend. You know, to me, every game was equally entertaining. I didn't think any one game was boring. I like defensive struggles, stuff like that. Yeah, I wish Carson Wentz played this game. I really do. I just feel for the kid knowing that he's having success in the regular season, but just once it comes to the postseason, he's not playing in it, and it sucks. But so real quick, let's peek ahead to division. I'll try and give you my best prediction. We've got the Vikings and 49ers, and all eyes are going to be on San Francisco if they can win this game, because they're the number one seed. They're arguably, you know, 1-2 in the whole NFL with Baltimore. They've got weapons galore. Jimmy Garoppolo's playing beautiful. George Kittle is proving to be a nightmare. Their run game, just unstoppable. And then their defense is shutting people down. Their defense, I will say, and I've written about this, I will say that they're starting to give up more points and chunk plays, but they're not giving up the game winners, right? Seattle was at the 1. Okay, false start. We're at the 6. And then still can't punch it in. And that was a couple games, like the New Orleans game, you know, in the regular season. They gave up the big plays, but they didn't give up the game winner. Just stuff like that. And I don't care. You know, at this point of the season, you don't care about statistics, defensive, offensive rankings. The only thing that matters are wins and losses. And so, all eyes on them. Minnesota, you know, they shocked the world already, knocking out the New Orleans Saints with a stout, stout defensive effort. If they can keep San Francisco's game, you know, game changers in check, and Kirk Cousins plays as well as he did in New Orleans, I can see an upset happening. I really can. But in this case, I think a lot of right will have to go for Minnesota if they're going to win this game. I think San Francisco comes to play. I don't think there'll be a slow start, kind of like New Orleans was. But I think it'll be close. I think San Francisco wins this game 2017. Then you've got Tennessee and Baltimore. And Tennessee's game plan is going to be the exact same. Feed Derrick Henry. And I'll say it right now, if Henry goes off for 200, you know, yards again, and he's in the end zone constantly, then we're going to see another wild upset. Because just like San Francisco, all eyes are on Baltimore. and Lamar Jackson, who is probably your MVP, you know, winner, they have got to come to play. Tennessee already went on the road to New England, won there. Can they go back on the road to Baltimore and win there? If Derrick Henry has humongous success, yes, I think they do win that game. Shock the world again. But if Baltimore, you know, if they do what they've been doing all year, where Jackson runs for chunk yards, or he's hitting Mark Andrews, or Mark Ingram's having big plays, or Hollywood Brown, I mean, there's a lot of sexiness on this Baltimore's team, both on offense and defense. If they come to play, I don't think Tennessee has a shot. So I like Baltimore in this game. I cannot say that I could not see an upset brewing. It's going to take, you know, a lot of Derrick Henry to get there. But I like Baltimore. I think maybe they run away with this one, 34-20, something along like that. And then we've got Seattle and Green Bay. Seattle, I don't think, was truly, truly tested. And that's not a knock on Philadelphia, but there was just too much going against Philadelphia in that game. But Seattle, as well, didn't really run away with it like I thought they would, knowing how defeated the Eagles were. So I think Seattle will play well in this game. What it comes down to for Green Bay is, can they keep their offense on the field? They've had some third down troubles, you know, and it's no secret to anyone who watches Packers games like I do. If it's not Aaron Rodgers to Aaron Jones or Davante Adams, who's going to step up? Because if Seattle takes those two pieces away, then you need someone else to beat them. A Jimmy Graham, a Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Alan Lazard, who has come on really strong. Green Bay needs to get their offense going. Their defense, I believe, is going to keep Seattle in good check for a good while in this game if it stays close. The Super Smith brothers and Za'Darius and Preston should be enough for that offensive line that has really kind of let Russell Wilson out to dry a lot this year. If Green Bay is going to win this game, their offense and defense has to sync, which we really haven't seen a lot this year. If Seattle is going to win this game, it's going to come down to Russell Wilson making big play after big play, because I don't know if I trust that defense if you're Seattle to stop Aaron Rodgers in the cold at Lambeau Field in Wisconsin. That's a lot to ask. But I think this will be the game of the week or weekend. So I think it'll be a nail biter. I think it's Green Bay 28, Seattle 27. And then lastly, we have, did I miss a game there? And we've got Houston and Kansas City. I had a brain fart there. This one's simple to me. Houston cannot get off to a first half slow start. Kansas City is probably the most explosive team, sorry Ravens fans, in these playoffs. Patrick Mahomes, deep threat, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, you know, Damian Williams is running well, McCoy is all right. Hardman's a good returnment. I mean, there's a lot of sexiness on this Kansas City offense, and their defense, led by the Honey Badger, really started to shut people down. So if Houston's going to win this game, they've got to put up points from the get-go. This has to turn into some kind of shootout. Because if they're down, they won't be down, you know, like 16-0 like Buffalo did. If Kansas City gets rolling, it'll be like 24-0. And that's just something Houston cannot afford. Now, yes, Texans did go into Kansas City earlier and beat them. But this is then, then is now. Kansas City just has, I think they've got their mindset right. They've got their players playing beautiful. Andy Reid knows that playoff demons cannot come back to haunt this team, especially after last year's AFC overtime defeat to the Patriots. They've got to get this game, and they've got to play to their strengths, and that's hitting the big play time and time again. So Kansas City, I think, will pull away 30-17, something like that. So that's my wild card recap. That's my divisional round preview. Follow me at Twitter, at WritingDavid. Follow Pro Football. Last word on Pro Football on Twitter, and that'll do it. Ah!